A very good evening to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 21st January 2021 Thursday class. So we'll continue with this sharing the essence of infinite meaning. We are at page 91. We'll continue from there. So this essence of infinite meaning, the teaching is based on the Sutra of Infinite Meaning. So they are using the adapted verses from the Sutra of Infinite Meaning, Wu Liang Yi Jing. So as usual, we'll have our half an hour of awareness-based meditation. I will off the light, then you can start your meditation. Always remember the four supports. Especially the first two, relax, maintain awareness. Relax means relax into every mind state that arises. Don't have to do anything. Just have a free mind. Don't think, just relax. Maintain awareness means no thought, just aware. Aware, finish. Then let everything settle down, slow down. If there is any sankara activity or thinking, thought activity, let it be. Don't resist, don't fight, don't try to do anything. Let it slow down by itself. If you are able to relax and maintain awareness, you will come to realize your true mind, the silent inner awareness within, and that is your meditative mind, that is your true mind. So meditation is to train the mundane mind not to think. You can train it by various methods and techniques too, but the best is to develop the understanding and just let things be. Because the original state of mind before the stirring is your true mind. So whatever you do, if you are not careful, you don't understand, you will create more thinking. That's why thought-based meditation cannot develop the real sati awareness-based meditation. The real sati awareness-based meditation is to relax and maintain awareness or silent everything. Don't do anything. And let the mundane mind or heedless thinking mind slow down and settle down so that you can realize your true mind, the original true mind before the stirring, before the heedless thinking, before all the mental activity or sankara activity. So this is the best way, the fastest. The traditional way is, of course, they come out with method and technique to anchor the mind. Otherwise their mind think a lot, they cannot meditate. So they have to have some object of meditation or skillful means so that they can anchor their mind. And the right way should be to develop mindfulness over that object of meditation, like your breathing, your breath. Develop mindfulness of the in and out breath, because mindfulness is an awareness before the knowing. So when you are aware, mindful, you don't think. That is what the silent mind is all about. So it's the same. But because they can't do it, that's why they need something to hold the mind. Otherwise, it wanders off, think a lot, heedless. So that's the reason why people need object of meditation to anchor the mind. But because they don't have the clear understanding, they use it sometimes wrongly to focus, to concentrate, to develop concentration instead of mindfulness. That's where they go wrong. The other way is to use a skillful mean to decondition the healer's thinking. We are the mind sweeping method, which I've taught you all before, then combined with metta, loving kindness. That preliminary exercise, skillful means you can use it. Then after that, you have to stabilize that silent mind, that awareness, to an object of meditation, to develop mindfulness of in and out breath or anapanasati. But for those who know how to meditate, it's different. You don't have to do all those things. Those are optional. You only need to have the spiritual faculties. But before your spiritual faculty of saddha, virya, sati, samadhi, and panya is developed, you got no choice. You still need to train the mind. Otherwise, it becomes heedless. But the best way is not to do anything. Follow the instruction I have given you, the four support. Just relax into every mind state that arises. Don't try to know, don't do anything. And let it settle down. The sankhara, the thinking, without any more mental energy given to it, it will slow down. Then you will experience that shift of consciousness. Suddenly, you become aware of the silence within. So when that happens, means your mindfulness is going to come in already. You are going to realize your true mind soon. So just be patient. Continuously maintain awareness until you can perceive that silence within, that awareness. Then that support is to stabilize that awareness. Don't do anything. Stay there. Maintain the awareness mind that is just aware. Then let it stabilize, settle down. That is the training. When your sati is established, then you are able to stabilize the inner awareness, the awareness nature, then this mind become different. It will have samadhi. Sati and samadhi can allow you to understand many things, can develop the meditation, can allow you to observe clearly. When you have sati and samadhi, there is no thinking. But you will come to understand that thinking is very near. The moment you want to know or curious, the thought arises. So the best is maintain awareness. Finish. Relax. So try out. Okay, we will continue from page 91, the last paragraph. We are using this book, The Essence of Infinite Meaning, teachings on the adaptive verses of the Sutra of Infinite Meanings. In our daily living, if we are diligent and hardworking in our internal spiritual cultivation, so here the word internal is very important. Not only you should diligently cultivate, diligent means hardworking, put in the extra effort. So if we are diligent and hardworking in our internal spiritual cultivation and with our external actions, then without even realizing it, we will have accepted and started cultivating the wondrous and true Dhamma. If you are sincere, you have the faith, and if you just do persevere, you will be on the path. You only need these three to realize the Dhamma. Faith, sincerity, and just do. Don't try to know. persevere, using this Dhamma to save and transform ourselves and others. We can inspire all to develop the Bodhi mind or Bodhi citta, leading all people to form an aspiration or to make the aspiration to relieve the suffering of sentient beings with infinite compassion, means taking the first Bodhisattva vow. There are four basic vows. The first one is the Bodhisattva vow to bring across or take across the infinite, limitless sentient beings within the entire existence. So to do that, you really need love and compassion, infinite compassion. Everybody can give rise to compassion, but clinging to a small and narrow, but it is not enough if only a single person act on it. We must bring together the compassion of countless people. Then we can generate unlimited strength. Therefore, we cannot limit ourselves to a small area, but rather must broaden our scope in order to bring widespread relief to all suffering sentient beings. I often say one gives rise to infinite. The infinite arises from the one. The unselfish love of one person can bring forth infinite love. The birthplace of Tzuchi was in Taiwan. Now we have expanded internationally. And Tzuchi volunteers worldwide are simultaneously encountering many different cases requiring their aid. The number of these cases make it impossible to describe each of them one by one. This is what is meant by infinite. However, because there are also countless people sharing the same aspiration to help those in need, love was spread across the vast planet to release sentient beings of their suffering. So this is how Tzuchi actually did their work, from one to many, many to infinite. That's how the Dhamma can flow. For example, while we are carrying out our emergency relief in Myanmar in the aftermath of Cyclone Nargis, something very moving happened in Sri Lanka. Two girls born into a poor family, 15 years old, Madhushi, and 9-year-old, Mitushi, suffered from congenital scoliosis, resulting in severe curvature of their back. From the time they were very young, they could not stand straight, which hurt their self-confidence. Their parents felt guilty and ashamed that because they were poor, they could not afford proper treatment for their children. Their affinity with Tzuchi began after the South Asian tsunami in 2004. At that time, Tzuchi volunteer went to Sri Lanka to provide emergency relief to tsunami survivors. For more than 3 years, long-term support for severely affected areas was provided, including the building of Tzuchi Village School and so on. In January 2008, members of Tzuchi International Medical Association, Tima, from Malaysia, Singapore, and Taiwan, together with other Tzuchi volunteers, went to Sri Lanka to celebrate the completion of a Suzhi Secondary School and hold free clinic there. During one of these free clinics, the superintendent of Guansan Suzhi Hospital, Wing Him Poon, met Madhushi and could see that she had severe scoliosis. He determined that she needed surgical treatment. At the same time, they also found that the other girl, Petushi, was suffering from the same condition. Superintendent Poon went to visit the family to let them know that he hoped to arrange corrective surgery for the girls through the hard work of everyone involved. And with the help of Malaysian team of doctors from KL and Malacca, it was successfully arranged for the two girls to leave Sri Lanka in July 2008 and undergo surgery in Malacca. The whole process was completed smoothly. This power of love and care was spread from Taiwan to Sri Lanka, then from Sri Lanka to Malacca. Some Tima doctors went even travel from KL to Malacca to help with the surgery. Volunteers from different locations worked together in unity to care for the girls as they would for their own children. Isn't this an example of inspiring all to develop bodhicitta? Bodhicitta means the bodhi mind. Citta is mind. Bodhi is wisdom or enlightenment. So bodhicitta is the mind of enlightenment. And how, by gathering infinite compassion, they relieve the suffering of sentient beings. So this is indeed a very wholesome deed. Not easy to do all this. And the two sisters must have good parami, otherwise they won't have such condition. So which means our Malacca hospital there is quite good, otherwise they cannot hold this type of operation. Actually, I have one classmate who is a doctor there too, from Augusta Maya, Dr. Wu Su Fa. I was told he was very famous. He's a very good surgeon. Yeah. He has been in Malacca many years. Okay, so we'll go to the next section. The subheading is, they are genuine spiritual friends for all living beings. So this refers to the Bodhisattva, the great beings. They are the field of blessings for all living beings. Yeah, very true. So genuine spiritual friend and great fields of blessing for living beings. They are the unsurmounted teachers for all living beings. Very true. You don't have to call them. When there is condition, they will just do their part. They are the safe, stable, and joyful refuge for all living beings. This is also very true. Not only say stable and joyful refuge for all living beings. They are the source of relief, protection, and great support for all living beings. They are the great guiding teachers for all sentient beings everywhere. So these are the great quality of a great being, Bodhisattva. So the Bodhisattva described in the Sutra of Infinite Meanings have already perfected Sila, Samadhi, and Panya, liberation, and liberated understanding and views. These make up the fivefold Dhammakaya or Dhamma body. So we go to note 19. So this footnote 19, we will read them. The five attributes of the Dhammakaya or Dhamma body are the five virtues of attaining Buddhahood. First is precepts or sila, the threefold karma of the Tathagata's body, speech, and mind are free of any fault. This is called the Dhammakaya of precepts. Then the next attribute is samadhi, the Tathagata truly calming, tranquil mind has left behind all deluded thought. This is the Dhammakaya of samadhi, the second attribute. Then the third attribute is wisdom or panya. The Tathagata's genuine wisdom is perfect and clear with complete understanding of Dhamma nature. This is called the Dhammakaya or wisdom or inner wisdom. Then the fourth attribute is liberation. The Tathagata's mind and body are completely liberated or free from all bonds. This is called the Dhammakaya of liberation, which is also the virtue of Nirvana. Then lastly, the fifth attribute is liberated views and understanding. The understanding that one has realized genuine liberation. This is called Dhammakaya or liberated views and understanding, and is also subsequently attain wisdom. This is an order. There is an order to this five attribute. Precept give rise to samadhi. Samadhi give rise to wisdom. Wisdom brings about liberation. From liberation comes liberated view and understanding. So this is the natural sequence. The first three derive their name from the causes. The last two are named in accordance with the effect. Together, these are the virtues of Buddha. Attaining Buddhahood through these five principles is called realizing the fivefold Dhammakaya. This is my way of defining it. So just for your info. This means that through the process of their spiritual practice or cultivation, they have perfected the five virtues for attaining Buddhahood. What are these five virtues? First is precept or sila. Spiritual practice must begin with precepts or sila. We start by disciplining our body, speech, and mind to avoid transgression of the threefold karma. So this one is very straightforward, easy to understand. And all wrongdoings committed through speech, action, and thought process? And don't they all originate from the habitual tendency of the mind to delusion or wrong view? If the mind's habitual tendency are not under our control, then we will transgress through our action and words. If we can maintain purity in body, speech, and mind, then naturally we can guard against wrong and evil and stop evil. So this is like training your mindfulness to be very, very stable, because without mindfulness you cannot maintain purity of body, mind, and speech. You need mindfulness to see clearly, to insight into phenomena, to awaken, to develop the initial wisdom or the penetrative wisdom. You need so manasikara, wise attention at the moment of sense experience, so that at the moment of seeing, hearing, smell, taste, tactile, or thought process, you straight away will develop the understanding so that you will not act heedlessly or deludedly. So this yoniso manasikara is the wisdom that arise at the moment of sense experience, they are already there within you. That's why you must cultivate until they arise. Then every moment, every instant, at the moment of sense experience, whichever sense faculty or sense basis, when they arise, this yonisomanasikara or wisdom will prompt you. And when they prompt you, you will know how to act. You will not be deluded by them. That's how you can develop all this. Otherwise, it's impossible. So for you to have this ability to maintain purity in body, speech and mind, you have to develop mindfulness. Then from mindfulness, you develop wisdom. And with that, you can guard against wrong and evil tendency. That's the reason why under Abhijja Sutta, the 10th step, the enlightenment sequence, the first three is relatively easy. You must have Dhamma friends, step one. And when you have Dhamma friends, you will have opportunity to listen to the true Dhamma. This is step two of Abhijja Sutta, which all Kayamita has or have fulfilled. Then if you really go into the listening of the Dhamma, you will develop the first and second turning wisdom to actually stabilize your understanding and develop the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara. Then when you are able to put the Dhamma to test, when it stands up to investigation, you will have faith in the teaching, the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. So step three is faith in the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha. When your faith develops, it will bring forth the virya for you to cultivate sincerely. Then through this first three steps, you will be able to develop what they call the initial wisdom, which is step four. After step four, what they call yoniso manasikara, then only you can develop the daily mindfulness, sati sampajana, means mindfulness with clear comprehension. Means your mind is always aware, mindful, most of the time. So without the initial wisdom, your mind will stir, you will react to sense experience. So step four leading to step five. After that, only step six come in, sense restraint. Now sense restraint means you will not break your precept anymore. Whatever that happened at your sense experience, you will not become heedless. You will not become deluded by what you experience at the moment of sense experience. That's how the initial wisdom, yoniso manasikara, helps bring about step five and step six. So that's what the author is trying to explain to you. But they didn't really go through the whole Abhijja Sutta. That's why it's not easy for normal people to understand how they can do it. They just describe the cultivation that you have to cultivate until your habitual tendency is rooted out. You develop the wisdom to straighten your view so that you will not commit evil. So sense restraint will be automatic. Then if you can have that, step seven will be the next step, natural consequence of step six. Step seven is you will always arise the three type of good conduct or right conduct, is right speech, right action, and right thought process. You will not be like other deluded being or unenlightened being. you cannot fall back anymore. That's why by then you are at least a Sotapanna, first stage of sainthood, or Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood. And then only you go to step 8, the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness, Satipatthana practices. Then after that, you will realize the seven factors of enlightenment keep on arising. That is step 9. And then enlightenment in the here and now is step 10. So under the Satipatthana Sutta, you will come to realize the final summary. The Buddha always said, after you have cultivated this four foundation of mindfulness, you will realize at least Anagami, the third stage of sainthood, if there is still some mana or minor conceit remaining. That's the reason why the third stage of sainthood will be realized after you cultivate the four foundation of mindfulness. And for you to go into the four foundation of mindfulness step 8, actually you need to pass through the first 7 steps, which will enable you to become at least a Sotapanna or a Sakadagami. That's the reason why you look at the Satipatthana practices, the cultivation under the sutta. The Buddha always said you had to start by overcoming, after overcoming covetousness and grief, unless you are a Sotapanna or a Sakadagami, you can never overcome covetousness and grief. Then only you do the practices, then only it has its meaning. Then when you do the four foundation of mindfulness in accordance with the Buddha's teaching, you will definitely know that you are on the right path, because you start to witness the 7 factors of enlightenment. They keep on arising, means you know you are on the right path. Otherwise, the factors of enlightenment will not arise. These 7 factors of enlightenment are very unique. The first factor of enlightenment is sati. So without a stable sati, you cannot start the four foundation of mindfulness. Then when you start, you can develop the subsequent enlightenment factor. So once you have sati, you can go to the second factor of enlightenment to investigate the Dhamma. Then when you investigate the Dhamma stand out the investigation. You have faith, you have joy, then that one drives you to cultivate. So sada virya. So virya is the next enlightenment factor. So when you have virya, it will drive you to cultivate. Then as you stabilize your mind, this virya will develop sati, and sati will stabilize, and you will experience piti. Piti is the 4th enlightenment factor. Then from piti, it will stabilize and become pasati. Pasati is the tranquility of mind, stillness of mind, the silent mind, the true mind, the unwavering mind. So this pasati is also an enlightenment factor, is the 5th enlightenment factor. If you don't realize this, you cannot progress. You cannot do awareness-based meditation. That's why to do awareness-based meditation, you must develop pasati. Pasati is your silent mind, your true mind. It is tranquility and stillness, nothing else, no thought involved. So when pasati is stabilized, the awareness nature becomes very stable, then your ability to see things as they are is very easy and is very clear. That's why from pasati, you stabilize it to develop samadhi. Samadhi has the characteristics of unwavering, collected. The mind is not only still and tranquil, but is collected and unwavering because of that stability. So initially you need samadhi to enable you to see things as they are within the daily life, every moment of sense experience. If you don't have samadhi, your mind will stir, your mind will not be collected and unwavering, you will waver. Waver means it will stir, it will be agitated. So when you have samadhi, you can at every moment of sense experience see clearly, see things as they are. And your mind, with all the conditioning, views, opinion, accumulated memories, views, opinion, and conditioning, will not be able to come out and influence what you see, what you hear, what you smell, what you taste, what you tactile feel and think. You can stand above it because you can see, yeah, the direct seeing very clearly. No words, no concept, nothing. Thing is just the way it is. So all the things that the mundane mind create, the duality, the views, the opinion, and the conditioning, the right and the wrong, the heedless thinking, all the habitual tendency, the defilements, the anusaya, the asavaks, all these are due to delusion, ignorance. That's why with samadhi, at the moment of sense experience, you can see and observe clearly. Then you know how you get yourself entangled, how your mind stir and become conditioned into fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, and lamentation, or become emotional, violent, angry. How envy, hatred arise. So all this is meditation. When your mind has sati and samadhi, especially pasati and samadhi, sati, pasati and samadhi, it can see things as they are. It can insight into phenomena. It can awaken. It can develop the understanding. Then through that understanding, you straighten your view, you liberate your mind. Then you develop the initial wisdom called Yoniso Manasikara. That's how cultivation is to be developed. And you transform. So when you develop this ability to transform to wisdom, after you have samadhi, you keep on seeing things as they are awakened. And that is wisdom. With wisdom, the last factor of enlightenment can arise. Upeka, equanimity of mind. Without wisdom, upeka cannot arise. The upeka, which is born of concentration, that one is different. That one is a conditioned state. It's not a free mind. The free mind supported by wisdom is the real enlightenment factor, upeka, so that you can live life, so that in the midst of living, you can still be peaceful, no matter what happened, where you are, under what circumstances and condition, who you encounter, you are still at peace at all time, anywhere, any place, any time, under any circumstances, because of the wisdom. The quality of wisdom. Without wisdom, the mind will stir, will react. It will want things its way. There will be a lot of views, opinion, duality, right and wrong, good and bad. Then they will also have a lot of arguments. Fair or not fair. How can you do things like that? How can you be so cruel, so evil, so selfish, so inconsiderate, so inconsiderate? So all this will manifest because people lack wisdom. So hopefully with this explanation, He can make the teaching clear, much clearer, so that you can develop the understanding to cultivate correctly, appropriately. So I have described this on many occasions earlier on. But this time, I think, is the most complete because I tie in the Avijja Sutta with all the cultivation practices and the seven factors of enlightenment. Okay, we go back to the notes. Second is Samadhi. By leaving behind all deluded thoughts, we attain the body, Dhamma body of Samadhi. When the mind meets external condition, it is easily enticed into giving rise to delusion. This makes it difficult for us to eliminate our negative habitual tendency or wrong thought. If we can eradicate deluded thought from our mind, then naturally we can eliminate our negative habitual tendency and remain in Samadhi. Then delusion and discursive thought will no longer affect us. So this paragraph, if you pay attention, you will come to a very clear understanding. Most Dhamma books, they never tell you how this can be done. They only have the words. Then when you read, it's like, wow, very beautiful Dhamma. Oh, this is what Dhamma is. But if you were to look into it with understanding and clarity, you realize there was no teaching. It didn't teach you how to cultivate. So just now what I explained is the one that you need. What is Samadhi? The sixth enlightenment factor and how you realize that. Otherwise you can't. And Samadhi is a free mind that is collected and unwavering. And that one also not mentioned. So when the mind meets external condition, that's why they also say it's easily enticed into giving rise to delusion because there is no stability of Samadhi. Samadhi means the mind is a free mind, yet is collected and unwavering. That's why the stability of mindfulness, the awareness nature, you have to stabilize it. Otherwise, you can't. You cannot be heedful in the midst of life. So all these are very important understanding. That's why it's not easy to teach the correct teaching, the correct Dhamma, leading to the correct cultivation. So they only mention it using Dhamma words. He said, if we can eradicate deluded thought from our mind. See, how to do it is never mentioned. Then naturally, we can eliminate negative habitual tendency and remain in Samadhi. So these words are true, but how to do it is never really described or explained. And not many people know how to do it. Without the understanding, if you have not gone through, you cannot explain. Then, of course, deluded thinking or discursive thoughts or thinking will no longer affect us because to do that, you need wisdom. So to have wisdom, the cultivation is different. You must have Samadhi. You must have sati, paccati, leading to samadhi, to have the direct seeing. Then you must see with mindfulness your thought process, how you function as a human being, how your views, opinion, and conditioning condition you into negativity, then how through your own delusion, lack of understanding, you input the content of consciousness which has the deluded thinking, the wrong view, the ego roots. So all this you must see them clearly with your mindfulness, with your awareness nature within. That's why without mindfulness, without the stability of daily mindfulness, you cannot awaken. There is no way you can awaken. So daily mindfulness is a must. Sati sampajana. This makes it difficult for us to eliminate the negative habitual tendency. So that one we have gone through. Third is wisdom. How do we gain the Dhamma body of wisdom? Here maybe they will teach you. Let's read on to see. Simply speaking, we must eliminate all delusion and realize what is true. See, they only describe. Eliminate all delusion. Easy to describe how to do it. What constitutes delusion? And realize what is true. So what is true? What is the reality? Truth. Dhamma. Or Satya. Tatata. So this one is not thought. That's why a lot of Dhamma, a lot of words. So they say, speaking, simply speaking, we must eliminate all delusion and realize what is true. Is eliminating all delusion really such a simple matter? That's why they also know it's not a simple matter. People claim to understand many things in this world, but do they truly and thoroughly understand? We should know that a slight divergence or deviation in understanding leads to a huge discrepancy. True principle must be personally experienced or realized. Only when we bear witness to them, that's why this is mindfulness observation, can they truly be realized. Means you must have mindfulness, awareness. For example, in 2008, Shiqi volunteer helped the survivors of the great Sichuan earthquake and cyclone Nargis in Myanmar. In these places, they witnessed the suffering firsthand. When they saw the disaster area and the countless families and lives affected, the volunteers truly comprehend the unspeakable suffering and impermanence of life. They reach a deep understanding that in their own life, there is no need to take issue over so many petty things. The most important thing is to engage in spiritual cultivation or practice. As a result of this realization, they began step by step to eliminate their deluded thinking and develop their wisdom. This was how they broke through delusion to realize the truth. So here they just summarize it. Yeah, the whole process of cultivation is a lot more than that. Of course, to realize the noble truth of suffering is very important. Like the Buddha said, this first noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. You have to understand it first. Then after you have understood it, you have to realize it. So understanding it is the first stage. When you understand what is dukkha, then you will move on to develop the further understanding of the cause of arising of dukkha. Then when you realize the cause of arising, you can manage your life better. That is the initial cultivation step. That's how you take care of karma. So that you prevent the karmic cause that leads to suffering and evil tendency, the friction of your negative karma. Then from there, you move on. So initially is to have the first noble truth, wisdom. This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. First turning is the proclamation of dukkha, the eighth reality by the Buddha. You can understand, you can awaken. Then you have the first turning wisdom. If you reflect and contemplate on the teaching, inquire, you develop the second turning wisdom. Then after that, you put it into practice or cultivation to realize the third turning wisdom. So the third turning wisdom, the Buddha say, this noble truth or dukkha has already been understood. How can you understand it? Not only the first turning or second turning, this noble truth or dukkha is to be understood. Not only you understand what is dukkha, you have to understand the cause of its arising. Then you have to meditate and silence your mind until cessation comes true, until you understand clearly the third noble truth, this noble truth of dukkha can be realized and it can cease. Nibbana in the here and the now can be realized. So suffering need not be, because enlightenment in the here and the now is possible. So this cessation of dukkha is also to be realized. Then after that, you must also know the path that lead to the cessation of dukkha, namely noble eightfold path. So the whole cultivation is a sequence of the first, second, and third turning of the four noble truth. First noble truth of dukkha. Second noble truth of the cause of arising of dukkha. The third noble truth of cessation of dukkha. And the fourth noble truth of the path that leads to the cessation. So all this take long period of cultivation. If you don't really have the understanding, you may not penetrate. What is described here is only words, the Dhamma. But the process is not taught. So what is unique in our sharing is the whole cultivation process has been taught to you. And not only taught to you, share with you. And people who have gone through, they know what this thing is. That's why they can also have the same experience, the same realization. Then when they progress, it can be confirmed by themselves. That's why the Buddha say, this realization of wisdom can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves, nobody else. It's only the cultivator that realizes it can understand all this. It's not knowledge. It's the awakening, the direct seeing, the transformation. So all these are the uniqueness of our sharing, where our teaching is very different. We go into the cultivation, especially Dhamma in daily life. Of course, we also based on the teaching, the suttas. And all these sutta, when you understand, they actually are all interrelated, connected. It's like a big zigzag puzzle, all placed together, pieced together. So when you understand them, there is no conflict. There is no I don't know what word to use. There is no discrepancy at all. In fact, the whole teaching, they are all interconnected, related. At every part of the teaching, I realize the Buddha is so wise, so beautiful, so beautiful. He never contradicts himself anyway. All his essential Dhamma, you can actually piece them together and connect them to the total teaching, the overall teaching. But the whole teaching actually spin off from his essential Four Noble Truth. The essence of his teaching is the Four Noble Truth and its three turning. From there, everything comes about. So when you are able to develop the understanding, you can come out with the mind map. My daughter did it after she actually draw the whole thing out. She discussed with me and used the Heart Sutta as the main source. Then from there, he expanded it. The mind map is very good. It shows to you how all the teachings are interconnected. And it's seamlessly matching. And they are all related. They are not individual teaching. That's why you cannot connect them, means you don't have the true understanding, the real Dhamma. If you have the true understanding and the real Dhamma, they are all interconnected and seamlessly matching. So this is the beauty. So today's sharing is very good because it's about the cultivation itself. The difference between our sharing and other normal sharing is other people sharing is a lot of Dhamma, a lot of words. But how that cultivation is to be developed, they are not really taught or shared. That's the reason why most of them, they can't penetrate the real Dhamma. They cannot teach you in a way to realize the cultivation, to really do it correctly. And even awareness-based meditation is not understood. So how are they going to develop it? So without the awareness-based meditation to develop the stability of mindfulness and awareness, you don't know what sati is. You can never comprehend the teaching. The Four Noble Truths is three turning, the seven factors of enlightenment, the 10 steps of the Abhijja Sutras, all the essential Dhamma. Because when you don't have the right understanding, right view, leading to the right samadhi or right sati, all this can never fall into place. And you can never develop the real cultivation. So this one, bear in mind. Okay, we will read on. When they saw the disaster area and the countless families and life affected, the volunteers truly comprehend the unspeakable suffering and impermanence of life. So this is the initial first noble truth reality. This noble truth of dukkha is to be understood. So if they can relate what they saw in weakness to the first noble truth, eight reality, then the teaching will stand up. Because when you see disaster, people's life, home, displaced, and nature's mind or phenomenon that is so powerful, it can cause such destruction, calamity, nature's disaster. There was a very severe earthquake, Sichuan. I remember that time I saw it in the TV. Because of TV, we can see the transmission. And this Nagis, cyclone Nagis in Myanmar was also very severe. And the tsunami of 2004. So when they manage to witness such disaster, they develop the initial understanding because I read again, you understand. When they saw the disaster area of countless family and life affected or displaced, then among all death too, the volunteers truly comprehend the unspeakable suffering and impermanence of life. Means to them, they suddenly realize all those things that we used to have, we take for granted. When nature's disaster comes, when we don't take care of karma, this thing can just wipe you off and overnight you are gone. Then in between, why do you fight over so many petty things, worry about so many small and yet petty things? So they reach a very deep understanding that in their own life, there is no need to take issue on so many petty things. Then they realize the most important thing is to engage in spiritual cultivation. Because without the enlightenment, the spiritual cultivation, you cannot cope with disaster. You cannot cope with all this karmic affliction. So as a result of this realization, they began step by step to cultivate. But how they do it is not described here. Maybe the book don't have enough space to do this. Maybe it's taught differently on the other section or what, I don't know. You have to find out from them. So they just summarize. They say to eliminate their deluded thinking, they have to begin step-by-step cultivation to eliminate their deluded thinking and develop their wisdom. So this is how they broke through delusion and realized the truth. So this part, step-by-step to eliminate deluded thinking to develop wisdom. Very simple sentence, but how to do it? A lot of big topic inside there. That's why that part is always not taught. So when you read Dhamma book, it's like a lot of Dhamma, very beautiful, very meaningful. But you dissect it, you realize not much teaching. The actual cultivation is not there. And who can awaken with this type of short words? Unless they have the condition to really teach you the actual cultivation and how to do it through mindfulness, through having the three right views, especially starting with the law of karma, then law of mind, then law of truth, karma niyama, citta niyama, and dhamma niyama. Then the fundamental truth, the three turnings, or the other essential dhamma, five spiritual faculty, five mental hindrance, and the importance and significance of puja, pre-puja and post-puja, and the importance of developing a stable religious routine to develop the stability of daily mindfulness, and how to develop the awareness-based meditation to stabilize your sati, your awareness nature within. So all these are very important. Okay, then I will move on. Fourth is liberation. Being liberated means having the correct perspective, means having the right view. Humans are intrinsically good. It is only because of our negative habitual tendency. These habitual tendencies have covered up our pure, clear, intrinsic Buddha nature that we create. So much negative karma. So this description is correct, nothing wrong. But to realize this, you need to cultivate. You need to stabilize the awareness within. You need to realize that true mind and awaken to it. Use it to meditate. Use it to develop the direct seeing, the observation, and the awakening. Unless you do that, you can't. You can never appreciate what that pure nature is, that clear intrinsic Buddha nature is, your true mind, your true nature, the unconditioned. These are words. They describe the truth. But unless you have realized or awakened, they don't have much meaning. Because those who are not enlightened, they will cling on to the words, knowledge, Dhamma. Then they try to use their mundane mind, their thought, the thinking process to relate to what this thing is. You can't, because the realization is the wisdom, the Dhamma, the unconditioned, not from the conditioned mind, not from thought. Thought cannot understand the unconditioned. So all this, you have to bear in mind. So this part I read through again, then maybe you can develop better understanding. Fourth is liberation. Being liberated means having the correct views or perspective. Humans are intrinsically good, means we have a nature within that is already complete. It's only because of our delusion that condition, our negative habitual tendency, that has caused us the delusion. So this habitual tendency, which are wrong thought, deluded thought, they cover up our pure, clear, intrinsic nature, or we call it Buddha nature. And because of that, we create so much negativity or karma. So we must learn to eliminate negative habitual tendency or wrong view and cultivate right mindfulness. See, the emphasis only appears now, right mindfulness. But how to cultivate is not described. And right understanding means right wisdom. In order for our intrinsic Buddha nature to reveal itself, yeah, you need right mindfulness and understanding or wisdom. Ordinarily, the action of our body, speech, and mind are all infused with our habitual tendency. This is very true. Before you are enlightened or awakened, you tend to have a lot of confusion or delusion. You have this tendency of arising the wrong thought. As I hear, they say, all of your actions, speech, and thought, they are infused with wrong view or habitual tendencies. For example, sometimes when we see someone from the back, even if they are far away, we may say that person ahead of us must be so and so. How can you tell from so far away? I recognize him by the way he walks, since he is walking with his 2 feet, just like everyone else. How is it possible that we can recognize someone in this way? It is because every person has a unique manner of walking. These mannerisms are habitual tendencies that have been developed. If we can eliminate all the unwholesome habitual tendencies and purify our body, mind, and speech, we can naturally attain liberation. So here is only the description. The actual cultivation is not really explained or taught. Then we move on. Fifth is liberated understanding and view. This means having a clear and illuminated understanding of everything and attaining non-arising wisdom. Non-arising wisdom means the unconditioned, 不生不灭, means there is no arising and no ceasing. This is the direct seeing, sati, the true mind, the unconditioned wisdom. This is the wisdom with which we see clearly, discerning all mind states or condition state or condition phenomena. It allows us to understand the various kinds of suffering in the Saha world. Very true. Suffering in the Saha world are actually the karmic causes and effects and retribution of suffering brought about by the accumulation of the various causes and conditions. So mindfulness must see this clearly and develop the stability or wisdom to understand all this. That's why you need to go through the Bodhisattva way to accumulate all this understanding. You have to experience and witness a lot of variation to the human psyche and tendency. And this wisdom helps us to reach the state of having eliminated all ignorance and affliction. That's why you need to take the Bodhisattva vow to perfect the wisdom and the understanding, otherwise you can't. Why do Bodhisattva come to the human realm? So this is easy to comprehend. Because they are genuine spiritual friends of all living beings. They are the great field of blessings for all living beings. They are the unsummon teachers for all living beings. They are the safe, stable, and joyful refuge for all living beings. This is very true. Some people, when they encounter suffering and difficulties, appeal to the great compassionate Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, who come to the rescue in time of suffering and difficulty, or to great vow, earth store, treasury, Bodhisattva, Tizen Wang Husa. When they are lost in confusion, they appeal to great wisdom, Wen Su Manjusri Bodhisattva. Whether they encounter suffering in body or mind, these people think of calling on Bodhisattva. That's why they know Bodhisattvas are great beings who have this ability. That's why they really call upon them, cultivate affinity with them. So this is how it can help Because this great being's nature, they are there all the time. You can develop the understanding and cultivate affinity. Their nature can help you. This is because no matter where Bodhisattva go, they can be a safe and stable refuge and joyful refuge for all sentient beings. They are the source of relief, protection, and great support for all living beings. There is so much suffering in the human realm. Who will come to deliver us if there are Bodhisattva who cannot bear to let sentient beings suffer and have made great vows and aspirations to go among people? They can serve as genuine spiritual friends. This is very beautiful. Kayanamitas. And unsummoned teachers. Allowing all sentient beings to have a safe, stable, and joyful refuge. In this way, they are the great field of blessings for sentient beings. They are truly living Bodhisattva, Renjian Pusa. When we learn the Buddha's way, we must first learn to become a Bodhisattva. Very true. The first step is to learn to calm our own body and mind. Only then can other sentient beings depend on us. For example, when accidents and nature's disaster occur, we often hear those affected say, "When I saw Tsuchi volunteer arrive, I felt more at peace." Very true. Or when Tsuchi volunteer consoled them and asked, "Were you frightened? Was it hard for you?" Many of them reply, "Though we were frightened and shocked, seeing the Tsuchi volunteer give us strength, isn't this been a source of relief and protection?" Yeah, this is very beautiful. Tsuchi volunteers are living Bodhisattvas too. Renjian Pusa. With pure selfless great love, we all work together hand in hand to establish concentric crystal spheres of perfect harmony. We open our arms to embrace sufferings, sentient beings, so that the body and mind of those suffering will feel safe and supported. Just like Bodhisattva, Tsuchi volunteers are the great support for all living beings within the human realm. Bodhisattva are needed to relieve people from the tangible, physical suffering of this world. These enlightened sentient beings are likewise needed to guide people out from the intangible delusion of the mind. On the one hand, Bodhisattva seeks the way of Buddhahood, and on the other, they work to save and transform all sentient beings. They take the great enlightened one of the universe as their mentor and apply the Buddha Dharma that they have learned to guide those who are lost. As Bodhisattva learns the Buddha way, we are constantly seeking the teachings of the great enlightened one of the universe and form an aspiration to unceasingly use this teaching to transform sentient beings. Then we can serve as great guiding teacher for all sentient beings everywhere. We have to point the way for sentient beings that have strayed from the right path. In addition to learning to save and protect sentient beings and to help them find peace and safety, it is even more important that we guide the mind of sentient beings onto a bright and correct path. This is our mission as Bodhisattva practitioner. So beautiful. Okay, we stop here. So we will now open up for reporting of meditation, Q&A. You can ask any question. Then you can do your own sharing. Most important is like what we have gone through, Dharma in daily life. That one is very useful. Our teaching is very different from other people. We teach the cultivation where other people don't have, because it's not easy to find teacher who can teach you how to do the cultivation and walk this path. Not only Dhamma alone, the words are not easy to comprehend. So a lot of Dhamma book may have a lot of Dhamma words. When you read, it's like, wow, beautiful, a lot of Dhamma. But When you dissect and go into it in detail, no teaching at all. With regards to how to do it and cultivate it, a lot of things are not clear. That's why they cannot really do the work. They cannot really make people understand. And most of them fail to actually teach in that sense, because most of this teaching, they end up in thought-based meditation, not the awareness-based. And even those who talk about mindfulness, awareness, it's not clear. The teachings are not clear. So hopefully with today's sharing, you can become more sharp in your understanding, and you can screen teachings easily, no longer like last time. When you see all the Dhamma word, wow, so beautiful Dhamma. Actually, when you go into it, hardly any teaching. So this is something you pay in mind. Okay, now we open up. Anybody wants to report meditation or ask any questions or share something, you just come in. Do you have any meditation to report or question?
Actually, I'm not very good.
Don't worry, we know you are new. Don't worry. Yeah. Is there anything that you want to ask or understand?
But still, not very good in meditation. Sometimes I do meditation, then slowly he will come up from my mind. Cannot concentrate at it.
Never mind, because it's quite normal. Most people start that way. Not everybody start, they already know.
That's what I do after that. It's slowly.
But it's okay, because you need to understand first. When you understand, then it's easy and you can do it well. But if you don't try to develop the understanding, it's not easy and not easy for you.
What I do is do breathe in, breathe out right there.
Yeah, that word breathe in, breathe out, a lot of people interpret it differently. What is breathe in, breathe out? The Buddha call it Anapanasati. Anapana is in and out breath. Sati is mindfulness. So mindfulness of the in and out breath. That's why you have to understand all this. Then you have to ask yourself, you do the in and out breath. How do you do it? That is why I want the Kayamita or Dhamma friends to describe your meditation, how you do it. And then I can correct you. So how you do it is very important. Your mindfulness is not about thinking and noting. Noting and thinking is creating thought. It's thought-based meditation. Mindfulness is silent, aware. Means you maintain your silent mind in front of your nostril. Then you allow the breathing to go on naturally. Then that awareness that is able to be aware of the in and out breath, that one is important. Initially, not easy. You realize split second, the thought will take you away. You end up heedlessly thinking, wandering off. That's how you find it boring. You find it very difficult to meditate. But don't worry, because that is the mind that is not trained, is heedless, thinking a lot. Wander off very fast. So anapanasati is a skillful means to anchor the mind. You anchor it to the breath. So when you start, like the Buddha say, breathing in, aware. Breathing out, aware. No words. But I have to describe to you. That's why I have to use words. So aware means what? Silent. No words. No thought, nothing. Just the awareness. Follow means that breathing and your awareness move as one. Initially, it's expected that your mind think a lot. It wanders off very fast. Yeah. So certain books even come with the instruction. You can expect it to wander off many, many times, even up to 1,000,000 times. Because if you are not able to stabilize it, it's not easy. The reason being the mental hindrance are there. And why are the mental hindrance there? Because you lack the spiritual faculty, the opposite five. Spiritual faculties are mind state that can allow you to understand spiritual teaching. They are conducive for meditation, where they are the meditative states. So the spiritual faculty are Sada, Virya, Sati, Samadhi, and Panya. I believe this one you know. Eh? Then the opposite mental hindrance are sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, or sleepiness of mind, or lethargic mind, then restlessness of mind and doubt. So these five that will arise when you don't have the spiritual faculty. That's why most people are not peaceful. They cannot meditate. So the teaching start by asking you to anchor your mind to something. So they call it method and technique. So anapanasati is anchoring it to your breath, the breathing. So patiently silence your mind and let the awareness and the breath move. Move until it's stabilized. Then when your mind doesn't wander off already, you are relaxed and just aware, then that mindfulness can follow the breathing. Then after a while, the breathing becomes very calm, very peaceful, because you are just mindful, aware, without thought. When you are without thought, you are very peaceful. Your mind settles down. So that is how you should do anapanasati. Can you follow, Meshe? Do you want to describe how you do your meditation? Then I can guide you. Can you come in again, Meshe? Yes.
My Wi-Fi cannot stop working. Anytime I join in the time, sometimes after 1 hour, he will automatically off.
Something wrong with the... You want to describe how you do it, the meditation?
Oh, usually I do in a quiet place. Then, because I'm inside my house, and sometimes I do halfway, people come and disturb me.
Oh, that one, never mind. But you choose a time where nobody will come and disturb you, miss, before you sleep. Understand? Do before you sleep. Or do immediately after you wake up in the morning. Nobody will disturb you. That's how you establish a good religious routine. Before you sleep, silence your mind, meditate, and you will have good sleep. And you will have peaceful sleep. Then you do all the radiation of metta too. And also the chanting, it helps to calm down the mind, to make the mind peaceful. So these are the various training that you need to establish. That's why a good religious routine means throughout the day as a cultivator, what do you do? The moment you wake up, you meditate, or you pay respect to Triple Gem. Then you do the salutation to the Buddha. You chant Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Then after that, you take refuge. Then renew your precepts and all those things. Then after that, you can meditate. Then in between, you can radiate metta, loving kindness. Then end of it, share merit, transfer merit. Then after that, you can go about mindfully doing your daily routine. Whatever you need to do, you need to go and wash up, mindfully do it. And then everything you do with awareness, with mindfulness. That's how you train, that's how you cultivate. Then if your daily mindfulness stabilizes, very easy to meditate. The next time you sit down, it becomes peaceful very fast, calm very fast. Okay? Hopefully this can help you. You have to slowly learn. Can you describe a little bit of your history? How do you come to join our class and all those things? Where are you from and all those things?
I follow Sister Indy.
Oh, Sister?
Sister Envy.
Oh, Envy, very good. Yeah, Sister Envy is a very...
Brother Sui An.
Oh, yeah. They are from Subang, right? Thursday class, yes. Brother Sui An, one of the pioneers. Then Envy also, long-term cultivator.
Because I moved to Puchong already, so I seldom go there already.
Oh, no wonder. So luckily you got Zoom, huh? Now you can come back.
Now got Zoom, then I join there.
Yeah, it's good. Then do you know our website or not, relative.com?
Yeah.
You go you can read and listen to the audio.
Because of my job also, sometimes very late, so I cannot join.
Oh, don't worry. Then do it at weekend, right? When you are not working. Then normally our classes are at night, except for Sunday class, which is in the afternoon. We start at 3 o'clock. Okay, is there any other thing that you want to ask or?
No.
Okay, thank you so much for your sharing. So we reject. Hopefully, what has been explained can help you, Miss Chin. So, your full name is what? Chin?
Chin Xiaoling.
Xiaoling, you are the one. I heard Suyang tell me before. But I haven't really make an impression of it until today. until you log in. Now from now on, I can remember you. Thank you for the good sharing.
Hello.
Yeah, hello, Selena. Nice to hear from you again.
It's quite some time. Actually, today, I just joined very late now, so I didn't meditate.
Oh,
but actually, the whole day I was doing cleaning the house.
Never mind. Whatever you manage to listen or hear, you can also develop some understanding. Then, do you have any question in particular? Anything that you want to develop more understanding?
Oh, there's one question regarding because you study Sutta also.
Yeah.
First thing they will tell you initial application. So I want to know when they say initial application,
what sutta
what did they are referring to?
No, what sutta?
Sorry?
What sutta is that?
What sutta?
Because this initial application, I think, is regarding the five jhanic factor one, isn't it? Is it?
Oh.
Yeah, initial application.
No, not necessary, isn't it? Just a meditation.
No, itself, no. They teach you, is it the initial application of thought? Applied thought.
Oh.
That's sustained thought. Is it that one?
Oh.
That's why you must be clear about what they teach you or what they try to let you understand. Because a lot of people, I realize, they become very gullible and excited when they heard, wow, sutta class, suttas. And they go in without much understanding. So like your case, you have to understand then whatever you want to ask, you can actually ask it in a proper manner. You mentioned initial application. The only thing I can connect to is the five jhanic factor. Initial application of thought. Then after that is sustained thought. Applied thought followed by sustained thought. Means doing concentration. You apply your thought on the object of meditation.
But this is all thought-based.
Of course, it's thought-based. But that is what the traditional teaching is all about. They teach you to focus, to concentrate, because their mind wanders off very fast. And because of that, they got no way of training the mind. So they choose an object of meditation, then they apply the thought there so that it doesn't run. like they can apply the thought Buddha or Buddha or Buddha or Buddha, or the kasina, like, then they visualize, then they apply the thought there, one-pointedness. So there are many objects of application. Sometimes they just do without understanding, then they follow instruction. So instruction that give rise to thought leads to thought-based meditation, because you need thought to understand the instruction. Then when you do the meditation without understanding, you will again use thought to meditate. And when you use thought to meditate, you will have problem. Your thought cannot realize the state of enlightenment, which is beyond thought. That's why thought-based meditation will limit you, and you can't progress further. So applied thought is to apply your thought on the object of meditation, something to keep you focused so that you are not heedlessly lost in thought. So this applied thought followed by sustain that thought there. Then if you do that over a long period of time, your mind become concentrated, but there is a conditioned mind. The mind become very dull, focused, concentrated. You can experience calmness, no doubt, but that is not a free mind, not mindfulness, not awareness, not sati. So a lot of people do that. Apply thought, sustain thought. Then because there is no more thinking, they kill all the thought at one point. That's why they will experience the third jhanic factor called pity. Then after that, they become very interested in the meditation, because this pity is a very nice feeling. It's a very calm and very nice and very peaceful feeling. They call it the spiritual joy or spiritual rapture. Then after that, you continue to relax into it, silent. You will experience a very blissful mind. Then your mind become concentrated, focused. Then it become one-pointedness. That's how they develop jhana factor. So a lot of people, they are teaching that. But it depends on what you want.
Hello. Depend the following your wise and your way of showing is more simple.
Yeah, it's just relax and maintain awareness. Then if your spiritual faculty is not there yet, the awareness tend to lapse. Initially, it can go into the sleep, but never mind, just let it be. Do not resist, do not react, don't do anything, just let it be, but maintain awareness. Try to be awake. Maintain awareness means be awake, understand? But don't think, and that is the difference. Most people, when they are awake, means they are conscious, they think a lot, because the spiritual faculty is not stable, so the mental hindrance take over. That's how they become the way they are, heedless, think a lot. So they cannot become peaceful. So they need something to anchor, to hold. That's why they either chant or focus or apply their thought, sustain their thought. But the best is still relax and maintain awareness. But not many people understand. Without understanding, you cannot do. You let the mind settle down. Most people cannot do it. So that's why sometimes I teach the mind sweeping method combined with metta, then anapanasati. Anapanasati is very good. The Buddha also taught that. Anapanasati, the first category of cultivation under kaya nupassana is anapanasati, mindfulness of the in our breath. So you can do that, it's very good. Just silence your mind and maintain awareness in front of your nostril. Breathing in, away, breathing out, away. Just do that until it becomes very quiet, very peaceful, until the mind becomes very still. Then after that, the rest is the same. When the mind becomes very still, means you realize your true mind already. But those who do anapanasati has the tendency to attach to that calmness, that peacefulness of mind that arises through anapanasati. So when you are very skillful in anapanasati, you realize you can calm yourself down very fast. The moment you sleep or the moment you lie down, the breath is with you, where you have practiced and trained it until it's very stable. But the trouble is with meditation is people don't know what they are doing in the name of meditation. So the purpose of Anapanasati is to train the mind to develop mindfulness of the in and out breath. Then after that, let it stabilize. Then when the mind stabilizes with mindfulness, this mindfulness will become more and more refined, more and more refined. Then you will experience piti. Sometimes you experience sukhang also. Then if you continue to relax into it, maintain mindfulness, you will realize paucity, the tranquility of mind, the stillness of mind, the silent mind. And that is your true mind. And that is the one that you should meditate to realize. Because that is an enlightenment factor. So most people don't know that. So they don't know what to do when their mind becomes very quiet. Some even panic. They thought, no more breathing. No more breathing. They thought they would die. So a lot of people are confused. So if you don't understand, you cannot proceed or progress. So here, what we learn is different. We learn with understanding. So a lot of Kayamita who know how to do it, they have already gone through all this. That's why they know. So for you and Miss Chin, because you all seldom do meditation, you don't have a proper understanding and a religious routine. That's why it's not easy for you all to develop the understanding. That's why you must ask, Selena.
Yeah. Actually, morning, I just sit for just a very short while only. But then I will also do the brain nutrition.
You just do the mind sweeping method, combine with metta. The mind sweeping method is to decondition your heedless thinking. And after that, you read it, metta is well-being. Inner peace leading to inner well-being. That will make your mind very calm, very peaceful. And you will like to meditate. But you have to spend more time. Initially, at least 10 to 15 minutes. Then later on, at least half an hour. Then when you are already quite skillful, you can do it for 45 minutes. That will be good. And you will have a very good session with 45 minutes. But once you understand what this awareness-based meditation is, you will like to meditate for as long as you are able to. Because even sleeping, before you sleep, you lie down in the bed, you can meditate. You can ask Sister Ng Bideho. Then when they wake up, the first thing is they are in a meditative posture. They can also relax, silence their mind and meditate. Maintain awareness. That's the only thing you need to do. So all this is going to help you. Okay?
Yeah.
Sadhu. Sadhu. Yes.
Bradio.
Yeah.
Bradio, 我要讲就是，Virgil 今晚的这个sharing 很好。
Yeah，很好。
对，因为很多那个那个 cultivation 的那个
yeah，
那个point。
Yeah， important points of cultivation。
So 很 clear 的能够
，yeah，
给我们知道要怎样的去 cultivate。这个就让我想到以前我曾经。我在一本书里面看到你有 mention 讲我们这整个的 cultivation， 我们就是 start from 这个 Eightfold Noble Path， 但是我们的 end 也是，我在 ending 也是在 Eightfold Noble Path，
对。
所以这actually 这整个的 cultivation 就是只是一个 Eightfold Noble Path， 但是 from 这个 Eightfold Noble Path 里面，我们可以 spin out 所有的整个的这一个Dharma， 所有的那些 point 在里面
，
就是我们的那个 first right view， 就是那个3个 right view， 就是在 first noble truth， 就是在那个 first 第一个 eightfold noble path right view， 当你是当我们再去 cultivate 的时候，去 purify 我们自己的时候 ，end up 我们在那个 four noble truth 的第四个 factor
里面，
它是 end up 把这个 four noble power 的那个 third turning， 就是我们 cultivate 我们已经 fully cultivate and realize
的
four noble power。
是啊，对，很好。
Yeah， 所以刚才你在说的时候，我就 recall 回这个
sentence
的时候。
Yeah.
Actually， 在一个 factor 每一个 path 里面。
Yeah.
都有很 deep 的那个 dharma，
Correct.
都要我们去 cultivate，
对，
要我们去 realize。Even start with 那个 three right view 的厚度
对， even karma niyama alone， law of karma is very deep， and a lot of cultivation involved。Then from there， the essential dharma also come about。The three evil root, what constitute evil, the five spiritual faculty, hatefulness, then the five mental hindrance, all this, they are part of the law of karma. Then Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, verse 183, then verse 21, 22, 23 on hatefulness, they all tie up with the law of karma. Then tie up with the training. Then law of mind even more deep, more powerful. That's why from there, it spin off all the other essential dhamma. Then we have the third dhamma niyama, which is law of truth. So these three already very comprehensive cultivation. Then from there, you connect them back to the other perfect. How from right view, condition right thought. Then without right thought, there is no right action, no right speech. Because view condition the way you think. That's why right view leading to right thought. You don't have right view, there is no right thought. So it's very obvious. So if you can reflect, contemplate, and develop the understanding, then your cultivation will not go wrong. We are noble eightfold path start with right view is because without right view, the whole path factor fall apart. When you don't have right view, you cannot have right thought. Then your thought condition the way you act and speak. So without right view, there is no right thought. Without right thought, there is no right action and right speech. Then no need to talk about right livelihood or right effort. Right mindfulness, everything will fall apart because you lack right view. And to develop right view, you need mindfulness. Without mindfulness, you cannot see, you cannot observe, you cannot do. That's why you need awareness-based meditation. You need to stabilize your sati, your awareness nature within. Then you train it until it becomes heedful. Then from heedfulness, you start. That's why the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 21, 22, 23, very important. Hatefulness is the path to the dead. Path to the deathless. Whereas heedlessness is the path to the dead. The heedless never die. The heedful never die. The heedless are as if dead. So all these are very clear. So when you have a clear understanding of this, you know. The most important thing to do in cultivation is to train your mind to be heedful. And to be heedful, there are two parts, like I always teach you. Ever mindful, constantly meditative. To be ever mindful, you must train your mind to be mindful or aware first. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation. That's how you end up with the Noble Eightfold Path again. So I remember the advice I gave you all is under the final summary of the Satipatthana Sutta. Because that sharing, I actually, within that 2 to 3 hour session, I summarized the whole teaching and it became very complete and very beautiful. So what you mentioned is very true. It starts with Noble Eightfold Path, it ends with Noble Eightfold Path. Well, the Four Noble Truths actually towards the end, Noble Eightfold Path, you have the mindfulness. So, the four foundation of mindfulness, the last category of application of mindfulness is
Dhammanupassana. And within Dhammanupassana, there are five categories of cultivation. And the last one is mindfulness of the Four Noble Truths and its straightening. And that is the one that ends the whole Noble Eightfold Path. So that one covers the Four Noble Truths, its straightening, the mindfulness of it. That's why the whole teaching is actually the Buddha's essential Dhamma and also his essence of his teaching, which is the Four Noble Truths and its straightening. That's why they all tie back to the Noble Eightfold Path. That's the reason why I always tell you, whatever meditation you do, if it doesn't bring you back to the Noble Eightfold Path, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So they are all interconnected. That's why the mind map, everything is so clear. And you cannot link the teaching. You think all the essential Dhamma are separate teaching, then you cannot see the Dhamma. Those who can see the Dhamma can link all the teaching. They know they are all connected. Yeah, it's related to the Four Noble Truths. It's related to nature's law, the reality of life and existence. Mm. So all these are very beautiful. Mm. Yeah, you can continue. So. Mm.
So, actually, 其实在 Four Noble Truths 里面，其实那个 Dharma 另外另去都是在那个 Four Noble Four Noble Truths 里面，这个 Three Right View 这个 八正道 里面，它从里面你就一直 如果我们一直有跟着 Brother 你的 advice 去 cultivate，你会过后你会慢慢的 去 realize that 全部就是在里面另外另去 cultivate， 然后当你去 cultivate 的时候，但是 initial真的是它的每一个 factor 要去 cultivate 都是一个很大的一个 topic 来的。对，我们要开始要 initial 要去 start to cultivate 的时候 ，even the faith 跟那个 sincerity，
对，两个就是一个很大的一个
topic
来的。呀呀呀！啊，对。So
要把这个 faith 跟这个 sincerity 这整个变成从 cultivate 变成一个 balance， 已经是一个很 deep 的一个 cultivation 了。对，then from there 我们才能够慢慢的一个 step by step，往里面走。对，very
good，很好。就是觉得说，这个
dharma 真的是很 beautiful，
很 beautiful，
对。
很奥妙
yeah.
And the cultivation is not easy because it involves so much understanding. That's why without the totality of understanding, the overall understanding, you cannot teach. Because sati alone, so many people got it wrong. Awareness-based meditation, hardly anybody really understands. So how can they teach? Most of them are thought-based, using the thought process. And a lot of the teaching, there are so much understanding behind for you to develop it. Even the Abhijja Sutta is not easy. The first turning, second turning wisdom, linking up to the Yoniso Manasikara, then Sati, Sampajana, the daily mindfulness. Mindfulness and clear comprehension of all action, all these stages of cultivation, they are not easy to understand. But when you understand, it becomes like very clear, very easy, very straightforward. That's why just now when you look at how Selena and Michin, they relate their experience or they share their part. I actually like the way they share. It shows that a lot of things, they are not clear. And they are not alone. Most Buddhists, I realize, when they search for Dhamma or start, they are very, very pitiful. Because most of them are gullible. They run around, learn sutta, they say sutta class, what class, what class. But they don't know what they are studying. And they are like individual topic. and not much understanding behind, not much detail behind. What is sati also, they cannot really develop the understanding. And the purpose of pre-puja, post-puja, the benefits of puja, all these are not explained. And why the Buddha teach in such a way, having all this puja, then the Dhamma session, the sutta study, then how did all these sutta link together? So not easy. So like today, my emphasis is vet through all this Dhamma textbook or the Dhamma book that you read or the talk or the hearing that you heard, you will know that the way they share and teach is so different from what we do. What we do here is to go into the cultivation. And we can go into the cultivation and develop the understanding is because we have done this cultivation before. Otherwise you can't. Otherwise it cannot evolve until today. So all this is not easy actually. So when you want to start, it's like the whole map is so big, like the world map. Where do you start? It's just like you study geography. First you want to know where is Malaysia. Then where is Kuala Lumpur or PJ, the place you stay. Last time I looked for Alostar. Then from there, you realize you are so small, so minute compared to the world. Then so many countries involved. So Dhamma is like that. The whole totality of Dhamma, the what they call my daughter prepare one, that mind map. When you look at it, it's like a maze. Wow, so complicated. Everywhere got essential Dhamma and so much explanation and all those things. So if a person who is new, they cannot. That's the reason why in the early days when I started, I share with you all in many of my talk and sharing, how can a new person understand the Dhamma and start the cultivation? It's not easy. Well, in the early years, I remember when I was searching for the truth, I just need certain truth about the mind. Then I can start really. But nobody taught me that. That's why you have to start with the understanding of mind. When you understand mind, everything else follows. That's why the Buddha said, mind is a foreigner, all things mind is cheap. When mind arises, all things arise. Then later on you have to realize this is the mundane mind. There is another mind, the true mind, where meditator, cultivator need to go that direction. And that is awareness, that is sati, that is the silent mind, the tranquility, the stillness, that nature. So unless you understand all this, you cannot start, you cannot penetrate. And the three right view that you mentioned is for normal cultivator. Start off by following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil. How to avoid all evil? Keep the precept. That's how they start. Then that basic teaching already very useful. Teach them to transform their life, improve their life. But the real meditation part, purification of mind, that one is another very deep topic. The first two advice already big enough, a cultivation, avoiding all evil, cultivate wholesomeness and goodness. Purification of mind is really a big topic. That's why it's not easy. So now, very good for Song to have this understanding. Because to tie and link all this up, unless you can see more or less the totality of the teaching, you cannot appreciate all this. Very good. So, sadhu, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Sadhu.